Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Pure Multifamily REIT fourth quarter results conference call. At this time, all lines are in listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time during this call you require immediate assistance, please press star zero for the operator. This call is being recorded on Thursday, March 8th, 2018. I would now like to turn the conference over to Pure Multifamily's Director of Investor Relations, Andrew Gregg. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'm Andrew Gregg with Pure Multifamily REIT LP, and I would like to welcome you all to our discussion of our 2017 year-end financial results. We will keep our opening remarks on this call brief, trusting that you've had a chance to review our consolidated financial statements and related MD&A dated March 7th, 2018, for the 3 months and year ended December 31st, 2017. If not, the documents are available on our website at www.puremultifamily.com under the Investor Information section or on SEDAR. With me today on the call are our CEO, Steve Evans, CFO, Scott Shillington, and Senior Vice President, Samantha Adams. Following our formal remarks, we will conduct a Q&A session, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up your questions. Before we get underway, I would like to make a safe harbor statement. The following discussion will include forward-looking statements that involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to be materially different from future results expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. These statements reflect current expectations of management regarding future events and operating performance, and Pure Multifamily assumes no obligation to update or revise them to reflect new events or circumstances except as required by law. For a full description of the forward-looking statements, including risk factors related to our company and business that could cause actual results to differ materially from the results discussed in the forward-looking statements, please refer to our MD&A dated March 7, 2018, which is available on SEDAR or on our website at puremultifamily.com. I would now like to pass the discussion on to our CEO, Steve Evans.
Thanks, Andrew, and thanks everyone for joining us today. Q4 2017 proved to be a very active quarter as we completed the Dallas Farmers Market acquisition in downtown Dallas and the Pure Fillmore Apartments acquisition in downtown Phoenix. During the year, Pure Multifamily acquired 7 investment properties in total, comprising 1,856 residential units for a combined purchase price of $328 million. We announced our intentions to internalize property management in May of 2017. During the year, we incurred initial setup costs while we established the new property management office in Dallas and built out the related property management software systems. We experienced a duplication of costs while transitioning from external party property management. These costs were largely anticipated but caused some noise in our Q2 and Q3 quarterly results. During Q4, we completed the rollout of our new property management software and have transitioned all of our properties to the internalized platform. We anticipate our vertically integrated property management platform will be able to generate market, operational, and financial data in real time, improve some of our leasing processes, and achieve cost savings over the coming quarters. In terms of our Q4 acquisitions, on October 2nd, we acquired Farmers Market Apartments for a purchase price of $66,350,000. Upon closing, we rebranded the property as Pure Farmers Market, and we funded the acquisition using proceeds from our June 30th equity offering and a new first mortgage financing in the amount of $33.5 million, with a fixed interest rate of 3.67% per annum for a term of 12 years. Developed in 2016, Pure Farmers Market is an institutional quality multifamily asset comprising 340 units with an average unit size of 824 square feet. The property is located adjacent to the newly transformed Dallas Farmers Market, a 26,000 square foot open air farmers pavilion, and is also a 2-minute walk away from Deep Ellum, a very popular restaurant and entertainment district in downtown Dallas. On November 29th, we acquired Fillmore Apartments located in downtown Phoenix for a purchase price of $55,950,000. Upon closing, we rebranded the property as Pure Fillmore Apartments. Developed in 2016, Pure Fillmore is an institutional quality asset comprising 230 units with an average unit size of 934 square feet. The property is situated in a passive growth location on Fillmore Street and 7th Avenue and offers residents a unique value proposition that includes close access to a large downtown employment base and beautiful views of downtown Phoenix. Pure Multifamily funded the purchase of Pure Fillmore with cash and a new secured credit facility totaling $50 million. The credit facility has an accordion feature that allows us to increase borrowing capacity up to $100 million U.S., which provides us with added financial flexibility and more efficient cash management, which we expect will have a positive impact on our recurring AFFO. At year-end, Pure Multifamily's portfolio consisted of 22 multifamily properties, comprising an aggregate of 7,085 residential units, situated on 351 acres of land, with an average unit size of 910 square feet per residential unit. The acquisitions completed during 2017 helped to renew our overall portfolio, as the seven investment properties acquired had an average year of construction of 2010, bringing our overall portfolio's average year of construction to 2007 at the end of the year. Deleveraging. The debt to gross book value ratio across our portfolio was 55.2% at the end of 2016. We have made a conscious effort to incrementally over-equitize new acquisitions to decrease our leverage ratios as we grow. As at December 31, 2017, we reported debt to gross book value of 53.4%, a significant reduction of almost 200 basis points in just 1 year. Although this delevering process created a negative impact on payout ratios in the near term, we believe that maintaining a prudent capital structure and conservative financial profile is the right thing to do for the long-term success of the REIT. I would now like to turn things over to Scott Shillington, our CFO, for further discussion.
Thanks, Steve. Before going through the financial highlights for the quarter, I'd like to note that all amounts stated on this call reflect Pure Multi's interest as disclosed in the MD&A. We feel Pure Multi's interest provides the most useful information to the unitholders when looking at our financial results. Within the MD&A, we have provided a reconciliation that reflects these adjustments. At year-end 2017, Pure Multifamily's investment portfolio was valued at over $1.13 billion and had a weighted average IFRS capitalization rate of 5.17%. Pure Multifamily's net rental income continued to increase, as the 3 months ended December 31, 2017, totaled $15.1 million, compared to $10.3 million in the comparative period, representing an increase of 46.8%. The net rental income for the year ended 2017 totaled $49.9 million, compared to $41.7 million in the comparative period, which represented an increase of 19.6%. Pure Multifamily's operating margin increased for the 3 months ended December 31, 2017, as it was 57.5%, compared to 51.1% in the comparative period, and for the year ended 2017, the operating margin was 53.6%, compared to 54.6% in the comparative period. The primary factor for the increase in the operating margin during the fourth quarter of 2017 was mostly due to the elimination of the property management fees, while the margin decreased during the full year 2017, primarily due to an increase in property tax expense, which was partially offset by the decrease in property management fees. General and administrative expenses for the 3 months ended December 31, 2017, were 6.4% against total revenues, compared to 2.8% in Q4 of 2016. G&A was 5.8% for the year ended 2017, compared to 1.9% in the prior year. The reason for the increase was primarily driven by the internalization of the asset management and property management functions. During 2017, Pure Multifamily went through the process of internalizing its property management function, and these additional corporate compensation and administrative expenses, which were not included during the comparative periods, include non-recurring startup costs, salaries and benefits, office rent, and additional office overhead. These non-recurring startup costs incurred during the year ended 2017 were approximately $921,000, and during Q4 of 2017 were approximately $219,000. When removing these non-recurring expenditures from the overall G&A expense, this results in an adjusted G&A expense as a percentage of revenue of 4.8% for the year ended 2017 and 5.6% for Q4 of 2017. It is important to remember that we have completed the internalization of our property management function, and as of October 1st, 2017, Pure Multifamily no longer incurred any external property management fees on its portfolio. We estimate the internal cost of our property management function to be approximately 2.5% of revenues on our current portfolio, which is a significant savings from the historical 3%, which was previously paid to an external party. The presentation of these costs was shifted from property NOI expense to G&A expense, hence the previously stated increase to 5.6% normalized fourth quarter G&A expense as a percent of revenue. However, the resulted overall savings will benefit all unitholders through the increased FFO and AFFO going forward. On the same property basis, year-over-year revenues grew by 2.7%, and Q4 over Q4 grew by 2.6%. This led to same property NOI growth of 3.8% and 14.6% respectively. The significant increase in same property NOI growth was primarily due to the elimination of external property management fees during the current year. And when normalizing this adjustment over the comparative periods at a rate of 2.5% of revenues in both periods, the same property NOI growth would have been 2.2% for the year and over the prior year, for the current year over the prior year, and growth of 8.8% for Q4 of 2017 over Q4 of 2016. The FFO payout ratio for the fourth quarter of 2017 was 98.9%, or 9.5 cents per basic unit, compared to 119.7%, or 7.9 cents per basic unit in the prior year. The FFO payout ratio for the year ended 2017 was 119%, or 31.7 cents per basic unit, compared to 101.5%, or 37.3 cents per basic unit in the prior year. Regarding AFFO, we feel we have been one of the most conservative companies in the multifamily REIT space with our deferred maintenance calculation. As for 2017, our deferred maintenance provision represented a 38% of total, a percent of total capex of 38%, which is significantly well below the Canadian multifamily REIT average. The AFFO payout ratio for the fourth quarter of 2017 was 105.2%, or 8.9 cents per basic unit, compared to 128.8%, or 7.3 cents per basic unit in the prior year period. The AFFO payout ratio for the year ended 2017 was 128.6%, or 29.5 cents per basic unit, compared to 108%, or 35 cents per basic unit in the prior year. The increases in FFO and AFFO payout ratio for the year ended 2017 compared to the same period in the prior year were primarily due to the bought deal equity offerings completed during the current year, combined with the timing of the deployment of the proceeds used for the acquisitions therefrom, an increase in property tax expenses, the additional G&A expense incurred due to the internalization of the property management and asset management functions, and the lowering of the overall leverage of Pure Multifamily's statement of financial position. The decreases in the FFO and AFFO payout ratios for Q4 of 2017 compared to 2016 were primarily due to the elimination of the property management fees, as all investment properties were fully transitioned internally for the start of the fourth quarter. Looking at the fourth quarter specifically, when removing the impact of the non-recurring property management expenses and a timing dilution of the June 30th equity offering from the FFO calculation, the FFO per unit would have been equal to 10.2 cents, or a 92% payout ratio. Our internal run rate FFO payout ratio is approximately 90% going forward, which removes the impacts resulting from the continued stabilization of certain investment properties, the quarterly fluctuation of property tax expenses, and specific non-recurring expenditures. To provide an update on property taxes, at the end of 2016, we had 7 property tax appeals outstanding. I'm pleased to report that we made substantial headway in getting these resolved, as all 7 property tax appeals were settled by the end of 2017. During the current year, only 2 of our 22 properties had their 2017 property tax appeals outstanding at year-end. Our management's estimated NAV at the end of the fourth quarter is $6.98 U.S. or $8.95 Canadian when using the 78-cent exchange rate. I'll now turn things over to Samantha, who will comment on our operations for the quarter.
Thanks, Scott. This quarter, and in fact the entire year, has presented some exciting challenges for our team. The internalization of property management, the rollout of our property software platform, and the integration of 7 additional properties. By way of a reminder, we started the process of rolling out our software platform in mid-July, and our accounting and day-to-day property management software applications were fully internalized by September 1st. All of the related enhanced operation software applications were active by the end of 2017. From a day-to-day perspective, our focus continues to be on occupancy. During the quarter, overall occupancy across the portfolio has increased to 95.7% leased occupancy compared to a leased occupancy rate of 95.1% during the fourth quarter of 2016. And our physical occupancy for the quarter was 94.4% compared to 93.7% for the 2016 comparative period. This increase in occupancy will continue to lead to financial benefits, and as a reminder, there are some costs associated with increasing occupancy in markets that have new supply or other challenges. And these are typically higher concessions as well as marketing and leasing costs. We believe that these increased costs are shorter term in nature as we counter the new supply that has come online in our various markets. Our Dallas portfolio is performing well, and the same property occupancy remained essentially flat Q4 over Q4. This is further supported by our same property revenue growth for Dallas, which was 2.4% Q4 over Q4, and the NOI for Dallas also increased by 16% Q4 over Q4, and this increase is due to the elimination of property management fees, but was still 10.1% when normalizing those fees. A few of our properties in Dallas experienced higher marketing costs and concessions as we work to increase our occupancy and address the new supply challenges. However, despite the new supply, our same property average rent increased 4.4% year-to-date and 3.3% for the quarter. In Houston, our properties are essentially fully occupied. Q4 2016, the occupancy at our two Houston assets was approximately 95.4% physical and 96.4% leased. And for Q4 2017, physical and leased occupancy increased to approximately 98.4% and 99.3%. As a result of our higher occupancy, revenues increased 3.8% Q4 over Q4, and our properties delivered 3.1% year-to-date same property average rent growth, or 2.1% for the quarter. With respect to San Antonio, I'm going to speak to the same property numbers as well as Pureview and Pure Estates. On a same property basis, our physical occupancy increased by 1.3% Q4 over Q4, and the revenues were up 1.8% for the quarter, and they are up 1.3% year to date. The same property average rent also increased 2.1% year to date and 2.8% Q4 over Q4. The NOI also continued to improve Q4 over Q4, increasing 15.6%, 9.7% when normalizing property management fees. Occupancy continued to improve at Pureview and Pure Estates and shows indications of stabilizing. During the fourth quarter of 2016, Estates was 89.1% leased and 87.2% physically occupied, and Pureview was 85.9% leased and 84% physically occupied. During the current quarter, the occupancy has increased significantly over the comparative period in 2016, with Estates increasing to 96% leased and 94.7% physically occupied, and Pureview increasing to 94.6% and 93.1% respectively. We continue to experience strong growth at our Phoenix property, which is located in the Chandler submarket. Sambresis delivered 13.2% NOI growth, 7.9% when normalizing property management fees, Q4 over Q4. The physical occupancy remained constant at 94.4% versus 94.9% quarter over quarter, resulting in same property average rent increases of 5.5% year to date and 4% for the quarter, generating revenue growth of 4.5% Q4 over Q4. On a portfolio-wide basis, we increased our weighted average rental rate to $1,264 per occupied unit, or $1.39 per square foot, for the fourth quarter of 2017, compared to a $1,244 average rental rate per occupied unit, or $1.36 per square foot, for the same quarter of 2016. On a percentage basis, our same property average rent increases were 3.9% year-to-date, and 3.1% for Q4. I will now turn things back over to Steve to wrap up.
Thanks, Samantha. I'm very proud of our accomplishments in 2017. It was a year of transformation for us, and there was a lot of effort that went into effecting these changes behind the scenes. In particular, I'd like to thank our senior management and operations team, who internalized 22 properties, integrated 7 new assets into our platform, and managed the impact of Hurricane Harvey. So thank you all for the incredible effort you put forward this year. In summary, Pure Multifamily continues to execute our strategy of building a high-quality Class A apartment portfolio in the strongest job and population growth markets in the U.S. Sun Belt. And despite some short-term vacancy issues, these markets continue to generate solid rental rate growth, as illustrated in our 3.9% growth in same-property rent per occupied unit in 2017. Pure Multifamily has a particular focus on asset selection that involves choosing assets that we believe will outperform the overall market, which include unique features that inherently create some barrier to entry from competition, either in their unique infill locations or through other locational attributes such as golf course frontages, large water features, expansive views of neighboring nature preserves or downtown cityscapes. Such attention to detail on asset selection pays dividends in terms of the long-term top-line revenue growth and reduced tenant turnover. In keeping with our strategy to build out our presence in our targeted growth markets and to enhance geographical diversification, we acquired 3 properties in Phoenix during 2017, thus enhancing our footprint in this strong growth market and moderating our property tax expenses. In 2018, we will continue to focus on building out our holdings in the strongest and most dynamic economies of the U.S. Sun Belt. Our internal vertically integrated property management platform will enable Pure Multifamily to build our brand and presence in our target markets while enhancing operational efficiencies across our platform. In addition, we believe the cost savings from the internalization will become evident in the coming quarters. Pure Multifamily's conservative approach to balance sheet management has resulted in one of the longest average mortgage terms to maturity in the sector at 8.9 years remaining, with an average mortgage interest rate of 3.72% per annum at the end of the year. Additionally, Pure Multifamily has 100% fixed rate mortgages, as well as a newly secured credit facility obtained during the last quarter. Over half of our mortgages are scheduled to mature after 2026, thus minimizing our exposure to short-term interest rate fluctuations. The U.S. tax reform changes have created fertile ground for positive economic growth in the U.S., which is currently nearing full employment. We believe Pure Multifamily is an excellent vehicle for investors to obtain exposure to this robust and growing U.S. marketplace. Although there has been some heightened new supply in our markets, market reports indicate that this will decrease in 2019 and 2020 as construction lending for new multifamily development projects appears to be waning, and cost uncertainty stemming from a decrease in labor availability is causing some multifamily developers to pause. And finally, we are preparing a move to the TSX main board, which we anticipate will happen in Q2, and we believe this move will enhance our visibility and liquidity for unit holders. So, on behalf of the management team at Pure Multifamily REIT, I'd like to thank our employees and directors for their hard work and loyalty, and of course, our unit holders for their continued support. And with that, I'd like to open up the lines for any questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, should you have a question, please press star followed by 1 on your touchtone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question is from Fred Blondeau from Echelon Partners. Fred, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning in Vancouver.
Hey, Fred.
Just 2 quick questions for me. Maybe the first one for Sam. I understand that most of the same property NOI growth in Q4 was explained by the internalization, but it seems also that, as you mentioned, that it seems like the portfolio is performing relatively well given the circumstances. I was wondering if you could give us your views for 2018 on the new supply within your 4 sub-portfolios, especially in Dallas.
Thanks for pointing that out, Fred. I think that although, a big piece of our NOI growth obviously came from the elimination of property management fees, it's important to note that the revenue growth is certainly showing signs of recovery across the portfolio, which is fantastic. In terms of supply, we're not really, there are no major sort of concerns in the Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio, or Austin markets, especially in terms of where our properties are located. The numbers for Dallas continue to look fairly strong in terms of supply. Some of the the properties that were supposed to come online in 2017 have been pushed into 2018, as is typical. So the supply levels, by most reports, are sort of in line with what 27 was supposed to be. So we'll see as we move through the year whether that number actually drops a little bit. I suspect it probably will, but we're looking probably across the DFW area somewhere in the 25,000 unit range for new supply.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And maybe Steve or Scott, what should we expect in terms of same property NOI growth this year?
On a range, I would say when normalizing property magic fees, obviously, because we didn't incur them for the whole year in 2017, anywhere between 3 to 5%, I think, is a pretty safe kind of range. I know it's a wide range, but that's kind of a typical what we've kind of experiencing right now.
Okay.
And I would just chime in, Fred, to add one other thing on to the first question to Samantha, talking about the market conditions given the oversupply. It's really important to note that in the face of what most people view as a, you know, certainly in some of our markets, fairly significant oversupply that we had to challenge with during the year, we still experienced 3.9% same property rent per occupied unit growth. And so as that supply wanes a little bit in the future, as virtually everybody views and believes that it will, we, you know, again, taken in context with the very strong economic growth that seems to be occurring and continuing to occur, we feel very bullish about future rent growth.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'll leave it there, and congratulations on the upcoming TSX listing.
Thanks,
Fred.
Thank you. Your next question is from Mario Saric from Scotiabank. Mario, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to high level kind of touch on the concessions, and I was wondering if you had any color in terms of the absolute amount of concessions in Q4 relative to Q3.
Q3 was about $800,000 in concessions, $850,000, sorry. And Q4 was about $500,000.
And how do you think about the progression of that incentive level over time? Like that's a pretty decent decline quarter over quarter. Are you expecting a similar type of reduction over the coming quarters?
Yeah, on a same property basis, I would expect that number will continue to decline. Some of our newer acquisitions, Fillmore and Farmers, are in stabilization mode, just coming out of stabilization, so they will probably continue to experience some concessions. But on a same property basis, the expectation is, and certainly the message to the team in Dallas, is those concession numbers will continue to decline.
Understood. Okay. And then in terms of on coming back to the Dallas supply, I think Steve, you mentioned kind of 25 or Sam, you may have mentioned 25,000 to 26,000 units coming online this year. Has there been any change in terms of the amount of units expected to come online, or is it just more timing related in terms of units getting pushed into the first half of 18 as opposed to the original thought that would be online in late 2017?
I think it's more a timing issue. And this is purely anecdotally, but, you know, we've heard stories that labor in particular has become a real challenge, and finding and keeping construction workers has certainly proven to be a struggle, which may have resulted in some of the delays in completing construction projects.
If the labor continues to be a challenge at some point, does that cancel projects, for example, does it decline, or does it reduce the absolute amount of units coming online?
I don't know if it would cancel projects, but my guess is it might delay them further.
It's going to be one of the factors that developers are looking at, together with, you know, projected increases in carrying costs due to the interest rate environment and just kind of, you know, the overall picture, factors that go into the picture to make a decision to develop or not to develop or to hold off. So it'll certainly kind of put downward pressure on new supply, which certainly doesn't hurt us.
Any sense in terms of what the kind of the labor cost increase has been on the construction side year over year?
Any data on that?
I haven't seen
Not exactly. Just a lot of anecdotal feedback that that you know people are being poached from job site to job site, and based on demand, that tends to happen, and that's what happens in a really robust growing economy with near zero unemployment rate.
And I think also the two major hurricanes that hit the U.S. as well have had an impact on labor supply on the construction side.
Got it. Okay. Steve, you mentioned, I guess, lenders maybe becoming a bit more, or the carrying cost coming up a little bit, given the increase in the bond yield. There was just one asset where we saw a slight uptick in your IFRS cap rate during Q4. The U.S. 10-year Treasury is up about 50 basis points year to date. Have you seen any impact of that 50 basis point increase on either buyer or vendor expectations in the market in terms of pricing?
Nothing of note yet. There's a pretty good spread, and most people tend to look at it on the longer term mortgage rate and what's happening with those. So I've been saying for some time that there was some pretty good buffer built in, and so we could absorb some interest rate movement without really impacting cap rates, and I think that's what probably our appraisal companies are seeing and saying as well.
Yeah, no, it's not much of a cap rate impact. The one that I think you're talking about was Brackenridge in San Antonio. It was just more of a market shift overall. The other three we had are at a 5 cap, and that one from when we bought it was at a 4.85 cap. It's just shifted in line with the remaining properties there to a 5 cap. So nothing major, just kind of a tweak to put it in line with the remaining properties there.
Got it. Okay. And then I guess, Steve, you also mentioned that one objective for 2018 may be to further build out the portfolio in your key markets. So maybe if the shoe's on the other foot in terms of acquisition cap rates, like are you still comfortable buying at the cap rates that you were buying at like late last year in those markets? Or would you expect a slight increase in the cap rates that you would offer to vendors?
I think it's going to be fairly consistent. And of course, we'll try to be as mercenary as we can when we're buying anything, as we always have, to get the best deal we can. But I expect, based on the feedback and vibes I'm getting in the marketplace, there won't be too much movement. And for us, we focus on generally locking in long-term interest rate costs. And if we have a positive delta that we're comfortable with, in conjunction with where we believe the rent growth and future of the property will go, we are very happy with making acquisitions. But at this point, I would say we anticipate right in the same goalposts in terms of cap rates.
Okay. My last question, just maybe for Scott on the property taxes. It's hard to go a call without a question on property taxes, so I'll lob one in. Historically, you've talked about, call it 6-8% growth year over year in terms of the property tax bill. The last couple of years, we've seen some pretty substantial home price appreciation in some of your markets. So does the property tax growth that you talk about, is that contingent on continued kind of, let's say, above inflationary type home price appreciation? And would that change if, for example, average home price appreciation in the markets decelerated down to 2-3%?
I don't really tie it to home price appreciation. That just more pushes people into average rent growth or not, the properties. It's more tied to the GDP or the economic indicators in the market. So Dallas is where we're seeing most of it. It is still projected to go pretty high in 2018, what we've seen. I think this year we were right around 20% was property tax expense as a total of revenues when you remove all the IFRIC 21 adjustments out of there. Next year might push up to closer to 21% just because we still maybe are expecting a low double-digit increase in property taxes. Again, we don't know for sure until we get to Q4, and once we get all the tax appeals settled or to the best that we can, that's kind of what we're budgeting this year, though, going forward.
Got it. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Mario. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question is from Brad Sturges from Industrial Alliance. Brad, please go ahead.
Hi there.
Hey, Brad.
Just continuing on some of Murray's questions on the acquisition front, you do have a little bit of cash on the balance sheet, and I'm sure your stock's not where you want to be currently. In the context that you do longer-term want to delever, how do you think about acquisition activity given all that characteristics right now? Should we be looking that more at tuck-in acquisitions at this point with more focus on the existing portfolio, or will you try to be a little bit more creative on an acquisition front?
Yeah, I think we're going to be focused more on our existing portfolio for the interim and until we kind of stick to our knitting and see some results on the equity capital market side in terms of valuation, because we view ourselves as being significantly undervalued, so we're not going to dilute anybody by issuing any equity at prices in these ranges. And we're pretty conscious on the debt front, to your other part of that question, to not lever up any further. So we're really having an asset management focus on our existing portfolio and you know, squeezing out good results.
And from the G&A perspective, now that you've had the property management internalized for a quarter, is Q4 a good run rate if you take out some of the one-time costs? Would you see a little bit more one-time costs in 2018 at this stage?
Maybe a little, not significant. I think from a G&A going forward, we project to be on our current base portfolio between 7 to 7.5% of revenue. However, once you back out the 2.5% that should theoretically be allocated to the property management fees, since all that's hitting G&A costs now, we'd be in a normalized range of 4.5 to 5.
Great. Thanks. I'll turn it back.
Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. Your next question is from Michael Smith from RBC Capital Markets. Michael, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Michael, I just wanted to swing back to the supply in Dallas. So you have, 25,000 new units coming on in 2018. What do you estimate the increased demand will be?
Well, the current projections are that the demand should be basically equal to the new supply, but timing plays into this. So, you know, if Company X is projecting 500 new jobs, we'll start up in 2018. Some of that might get pushed into 2019, which will impact the demand a little bit. But overall projections are essentially flat.
Yeah, pretty much full absorption.
Yep.
Sam's point is, in hindsight, it never works exactly the way they say. It could be better, slightly worse during a given quarter, but pretty much over the longer term in lockstep with the supply.
Okay. And any initial reads on 2019 supply?
I don't know if we're going to fix a number to that off the top of our heads, but
Currently it's lower than 2018.
Sure.
Yeah, currently it's lower than 2018. But again, it's a bit of a moving target. So, every time you read the reports, depending what date they've used, the numbers do seem to jump around a bit. And it's really early in 2018 to get a really good fix on 2019. But so far the projections are certainly lower than 2018.
Okay. And switching gears, so Pure Farmers Market and Pure Fillmore, are they meeting your underwriting? I mean, I know you've only had them for a little bit, but are they hitting your pro forma?
Currently, Fillmore is actually exceeding our pro forma, and Farmers is more or less in line, I believe, with the pro forma, maybe slightly below.
Okay. And just in terms of taxes, should we be anticipating and modeling like a bump in taxes for properties like those as they get stabilized?
For Fillmore, it's basically set. In Arizona, you are capped at a 5% increase each year. And last year, Fillmore went from a development tax basically level to an operating one that's coming into 2018. So we basically know what Fillmore is, and that was all in our underwriting. Farmers could not. Again, we have, over, as we mentioned to Mario, overall across the portfolio, kind of a 10 to 12% increased budget in, on tax expense. But again, that really depends on when we get our appeals through and so forth. And until we actually see it in Q4, that's our kind of our best estimate for this year.
Okay. And just on that, so I guess if you normalize for the property management, Q4 same property NOI was 8.8%, but that included some of those tax appeals.
Correct.
What would it have been without the tax if you normalize for that as well?
Yeah, 7.1%.
Oh, 7.1%.
Yeah, so we actually had, during the year, we had the $323,000 across the portfolio of refunds. In 2016, we had $200,000-something of refunds as well. So when you net those two out, you get rid of all those refunds in both periods, and it works out to 7.1.
Okay. Good. Okay, and finally, you had a very busy year in 2017, and I know one of your objectives, obviously, as you mentioned, is to build out your portfolio or fill out your portfolio. That'll depend a bit, I guess, on the capital markets. But besides that, on an operational front, 12 months from now, if you're looking back, what do you really want to achieve? What's your top two or three objectives from an operations point of view? What are you mostly focused on?
Well, occupancy and margin are two key focuses for us on an operational basis. If I was to give you my wish list, I'd like to be able to access capital and continue to grow our portfolio, but that's, as you said, incumbent on kind of what happens in the marketplace in terms of share value before we consider doing that. So we'd like to take some more steps. We continue to see good opportunities in the marketplace, we'll stay tuned to that, but our particular focus for the next quarter or so will be really wringing what we can out of operations and doing the best job for stabilizing the assets.
Okay. And would you anticipate recycling any capital, selling a building to buy a new one or anything like that?
We always look at that on an ongoing basis, so that's something that could come up. We don't have anything imminent. We have probably two or three assets that would fit into the category for potential recycling, and we kind of on an ongoing basis look at and review each asset in the context of where we think we can take cash flow from that asset on a go-forward basis and kind of do basically a view of what the best placement of our capital would be, whether we exit an asset and roll it into something else. Part of that ties into the concept that we've been working, which is sort of an urban renewal approach to our portfolio. So if it's an older asset, we keep that in mind as well because we can renew our portfolio. But the ones that we do have that are a little older in age right now are generating solid revenue growth for us, so we're not in any kind of panic to divest those for that reason.
Okay,
so
thank you.
That's something that's always on our mind.
Sure. Thank you. That's it for me.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, should you have a question, please press star followed by one. Your next question is from Hyman Gupta from GMP Securities. Hyman, please go ahead.
Thank you. So my question is regarding the target acquisition markets. So given the property management internalization, is it now easier or is it more difficult for you to expand to other markets?
I would characterize it as neutral, because if we're expanding to a market that we didn't have full confidence in for our team, we could enter it in the same manner as we would have prior to the internalization, and that is to perhaps use short-term third-party management in whatever market we're focusing on entering into, with a view of rolling that into our platform on a very smooth process, maybe a 9 months to a year out kind of thing. So I think that doesn't inhibit our ability to enter markets. If anything, it just gives us more intelligence on our existing markets and more ability to have a sort of a scalable platform as we go forward and grow, albeit if we have to use third party to smooth out the potholes a little bit, we would consider doing that.
Sure. Thank you. And then, you know, just to be clear, Scott, you mentioned same property NOI growth guidance of 3-5%. So what do you assume? Do you assume any increase in property taxes in your guidance?
Yeah, I just mentioned to Mario and to Michael there, I think kind of a low double digit, so 10-12% kind of portfolio-wide property tax increase is what we're projecting right now. And again, it depends at year end. If we have a lot of appeals outstanding, it could be a lot higher. If we've settled a lot of appeals, it could be a little lower. So we really, you don't know until till Q4 comes around, but that's our kind of projection overall for the year.
Sure. Thank you. I'll turn it back.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. Your next question is from Dean Wilkinson from CIBC World Markets. Dean, please go ahead.
Thanks. Hey, guys.
Hey, Dean.
Maybe just a couple of accounting questions or clarifications from Scott. On that, the tax appeal, you said 7.1% would have been the same property growth if you X sort of the rebates back, sort of the 17/16. Is that netting everything out in the fourth quarter, or would another way to think about that would be to smooth it over four quarters?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I didn't smooth it over. I just basically eliminated it. So I eliminated last year's property taxes rebates.
Yep.
And I eliminated all the ones that came in this year. So it's just a straight whatever our expense was before rebates in the 2 years, or in the quarters that it fell into.
Okay. And as you look forward to this year, what is your sort of appeal process look like? You think you got two outstanding? Are there more to go?
No. So we just have the two.
Yep.
Carrying over from 2017, and then we will start this process again kind of late summer for the 2018 ones, and hopefully we can get, like this year, we got a lot done, a lot settled, and hopefully we can do that again going forward. It really depends on the counties. If they're busy, it can take a while. We can push as much as we want, but we don't want to settle early just for the sake of settling early for accounting purposes. You want to do what's best for the business. If it goes over year end and you can get more money back that way, then that's kind of the approach we take.
And how many would you be appealing? All?
In general? Well, the Arizona ones, we really don't need to.
Right.
There's a cap. There's a cap there, so those are pretty safe. Another reason why we're trying to expand Arizona is to limit that risk. In Texas, I'd say on average, and it's different every year, but on average, we're about two-thirds of the properties each year.
About two-thirds each year. Okay, so this year will look the same. So it will still be a taxing issue for 2018.
In Texas, I think it's going to be an issue, and that's as we expand more to other markets. Every state's different. As we expand more to other states, we will, depending on how their process works, it could be a benefit or it could be a similar issue. But hopefully, we expand more, it'll kind of dilute itself out a little bit.
Got it. And then just in the other income line, there was $425,000 in the quarter. What was that specifically?
Yeah, it's some revenue guarantees on the Fillmore and Farmers Market acquisitions just because they're going through stabilization. So when we acquired them for a 6-month to 1-year period, we just had some occupancy level type guarantees what a revenue should be on the performers. So if they didn't meet that, we had some additional money flow in.
That came back from the vendor.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then just going back to Brad's question on the G&A run rate, do you expect any material cost increase or big jumps as a result of the TSX listing? Is it that much more expensive than being
an
adventurer?
Yeah, so without running numbers yet, there are some one-time fees when you first move, I think it's around $460,000 Canadian. In addition to, you'll have slightly higher legal fees and slightly higher filing fees, but the biggest impact is that one-time move. So assuming that everything gets approved and so forth in Q2, it'll most likely come into the Q2 of this year.
It'll be in the Q2 number. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's it for me. Thanks, guys.
Right on. Thanks, Dean.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please proceed.
Thank you, operator. On behalf of Samantha, Scott, Andrew, and the entire Pure Multifamily Management team, we'd like to thank you all for spending some time with us today. And as we said in the past, do not hesitate to call us if you have questions between our quarters. We're always happy to chat about our company and our portfolio. Thanks very much.